This is the Kitchen and Bathroom Design Podcast from Taylist Media in association with KBB Birmingham 2020.
Welcome to the Kitchen and Bathroom Design Podcast. I'm the Managing Editor of Taylist Media, Andy Davis. And this week we're looking at how to design spa-like bathrooms. Now, bathrooms are so often described as being a sanctuary, a haven, a place to relax. And this catch-all phrase of spa-like seems to come up all the time in client briefs. But what does it really mean? How do you as designers give the client what they want? And how do you transform a day-to-day family bathroom into this spa-like experience and back again? I met up with a couple of fantastic designers recently to talk all this through, Kia Stanford and Sam Watkins-McRae, who both have eponymous design studios here in London. But first, we're now just over a week away from KBB Birmingham, which runs from March the 1st to the 4th at the NEC. And we're recording live episodes of this podcast every day at 2 o'clock in the main bar. So come along, listen in, say hello, buy us a drink, whatever takes your fancy. To find out more about KBB 2020, go to kbb.co.uk. So back to spa-like bathrooms, and I'll hand over to me, Kia, and Sam. But don't forget to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss new episodes, and feel free to rate and review us too. Right, so Kia, let's start with you. Just tell us a little bit about Kia Designs.
Kia Designs, we are a residential interior design service. We run out of London Bridge and we cover the whole of London, and we do some international projects as well.
So Sam, tell us a bit about your business, because what's interesting about both of you are your business is obviously named after yourselves. So I don't keep having to repeat both names. So let's, Sam, tell us about your eponymous business.
So I am Samantha Watkins-McRae, but my business is called SWM Interiors and Sourcing, and I am based in Highgate in North London. I'm primarily residential, but I do small commercial projects, so office interiors, reception spaces. And yeah, I was founded in 2012 after working in practice.
Brilliant. Okay, so we're here to talk about spa-like bathrooms, and I keep sort of waving my fingers in the air when I say that, even though people can't see me do it, because it's a kind of catch-all phrase that seems to come up a lot when people talk about what the brief was from clients. So I thought it was worth getting a couple of you guys in to talk about what that actually means and how you translate that into reality. So let's start at the beginning. Kia, if a client comes to you and you meet them for the first time and they say, oh, I want a spa-like bathroom, what do you think is in their head? What do they think it means?
A lot of the time for clients, when they say something like that, it is much more of a feeling than it is necessarily a list of things that they expect to be in there. So a lot of the time when somebody says spa-like, they're often referring to how it makes them feel.
Right.
And that relaxing feeling that you end up with at the end of using a spa is what they're often aiming for. So, yeah, they don't have any kind of... They often don't have a sort of idea of exactly what they need in there to be able to create that. They just know how they want it to make them feel, which is relaxed and with like they've been a bit pampered. So those tend to be the kind of feelings that come out of it.
So Sam, do you concur with that? Is this something they know what they like when they see it, but they don't really know what it actually means?
Yeah, no, totally. And also just to add on to what Kia's saying as well, I think a lot of it depends on, yes, it's the feeling, absolutely, I concur, but the budget that they have encapsulates basically what they can physically achieve, because there's so many permutations of what a spa bathroom will actually evolve to be.
How many of them do you think have ever actually been to a spa?
All of them.
Right.
But it's very different on depending what they've actually been to and what they do prefer, whether it is that thing that they've been to a lot of hammams and that's the kind of overall feeling that they associate. So it's not necessarily a colour palette or an exact type of spa equipment. That's very individual as to what they've sort of done as... Yeah, a hammam is one type of being able to do that. And you can have, you know, bright, beautiful colours with that, but you kind of need the steam aspect of that to make that work. Or you could have somebody who's been and had more of a Scandinavian experience and they want a sauna. So you've got a very, very different look and feel, but they would both be what somebody would come to you initially and say, I'd like a spa bathroom.
So is this one of those things where they come in and say, I'd love a big steam sauna experience because I did it once in a hotel, but and then they say, I've got 10 grand to spend or something.
And you six just, square metres.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just sort of look slightly puzzled and have to go back to the beginning with them. So let's start with the journey then. How do you then, if what they want is a quite vague concept, it's quite ethereal thing in their heads, how do you sit with them and actually drill down to what they want and what they need?
I think in terms of spatial planning to start with, obviously what the perimeters of the space actually look like, and then also mood boards as well, but and then working from that point to see what we can physically achieve in terms of space, whether they can have a bath in there, whether there will just be a shower in there, especially with London restrictions of space, and then it's encapsulating their feeling and their mood through the mood boards and then drilling down the design from there.
This is where the spa-like thing comes in, because this is still often, I imagine, especially London, the family bathroom. Mm. So it's not like they've just got one room that's only going to be their spa room. Mm. They've got to sort of have a dual purpose of it. So how do you kind of square that circle?
Because everyone has a very different idea of what that looks like, we did what would one client would very much classify as, you know, her kind of spa bathroom. It does have a shower in there. It has a standalone bath. The main thing that for her encapsulated that kind of relaxation and that spa-like feeling was being able to have really low-level lights. Mm-hmm. So we've done the entire ceiling like a skylight. So we've got stars all across the ceiling. At every other time when the kids are using it, you know, when she's just getting ready first thing in the morning for 5 minutes in the shower, she can do all of that. But to be able to just have that kind of lighting was what for her was enough to sort of say, like, she'd been to one of the hotels in London, she'd seen this and she was just like, it was just so relaxing. I felt like I was outside. She's got, you know, a beautiful window on one side and she was like, I want to kind of bring that in. And that was enough for her to give her that feeling. Whereas other people might sort of say like, oh, I definitely need, you know, a sauna. I need a separate steam room. Not interested in a bath. Haven't taken one in 20 years. And you often go, you have had a shower, though.
I hope.
Yeah. But, you know, it's so individual in that way that was enough. And some other people might say, like, no, it has to have, you know, a massage space within it or be able to incorporate someone coming over and doing that.
So where do you start, Sam? How do you get under the skin of what it is these people really want?
You've been introduced to your client, you have your initial meeting, but I think it's the more you spend time with them as well in terms of their actual house, whether it's to do with them updating the house that they're in or the new house, and then that, you know, their day-to-day workings, the more you start to understand them as people. And also as well, going back to the whole conversation about how much they've got to spend, I did a project in South Kensington where the client fortunately had a great budget and had spent a lot of time in terms of spas around the world. And I think then that also challenges you as a designer in terms of thinking about the technology and how that room will really function for them and give them that kind of like high-end spa experience. But I just think it's about spending so much more time with them as people, investing in them, that you tend to get that journey together and then get the end result that they're after.
Because I guess some people, when they refer to a spa-like experience, all they might be referring to, they just want to be able to read a book in the bath or something. It's just the relaxing part of it, and drilling down to what it is that makes them feel the way they do is the hardest part before you can even start specifying anything.
Yeah, we find that we do a client inspiration meeting, and it will be often interesting when you're going through, because it's a lot of the time they'll rule a lot of things out, and that can be a really, really useful process of you just putting some sort of ideas out there and them sort of being like, oh yeah, as I said, if we're doing something like a spa, if you go from everything to the very Scandinavian look through to this sort of hammam type, that is a very wide berth of design ideas there, and they'll very easily look and be like, oh, I didn't mean that. It's like, okay, right. Fantastic. It kind of narrows it down, and it means that then you can sort of start to find out. We also do, when we do our site survey, we ask them not to tidy, which is a big challenge for people because they want it to look really nice, but it's just like, we kind of need to know the problems that you're dealing with. And if they've got a bathroom where there is you know, 50,000 kids' toys in it. It's just like, okay, well, what can we do to be able to turn this from this space into a more relaxing area?
That would explain why Mum wants a spa in our house, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and it is that kind of thing where it's just like, okay, well, actually, we ended up going for a tub that had a really sharp cut-in at the bottom that meant that we could hide down the side all of the baskets of kids' toys. They're really accessible, super easy for her to be able to get to, but they are not anywhere in her eyeline if she wants to just put everything away. It's all about the view out of the window and up to the, towards what essentially now looks like a sky. And so it's working all of those things out when they come in and when we see the space and what they're struggling with, even if it is where they just are currently living at the moment, because a lot of the time they won't necessarily have thought massively about what the new space needs to look like, apart from like these few things. You know, we definitely need one bathroom that definitely has a bath. We need one bathroom that does this. You know, this one needs to be a little bit more accessible for Mum when she comes to visit, and all of those kinds of things. They have that, but then trying to design is very difficult to articulate in words. And so we find that pictures and textures and things like that really help them to sort of look, and they're just like, oh yes, no, I love the feel of this, whereas they'll sort of look at some things and be like, oh, that feels really cold, like it's pink. but it's super personal. So we tend to find that anything that means that gets them looking and touching things kind of helps.
Yeah.
It's that idea of transforming it from one thing to another when you need it to be one or need it to be the other. So on one occasion you need it to be a kid's bathroom that is, you know, the kids complain, but then instantly you need it to transform into Mum's spa-like relaxing environment. And is that the challenge?
That's when storage is amazing, isn't it? And it's really key. And in terms of actually mapping out that space as well, and where you can actually get in some really, as Keir's saying as well, like creative storage to clear sight lines, to make it feel serene, so you get rid of all the clutter, which is obviously, it's part of the spa experience, isn't it, that you don't see clutter. It's all very considered, and the space is considered, and that's when storage, really clever storage, I just think is...
The function definitely comes before anything. Like, it could look pretty. Lots of people can do pretty, but if you have seen that they're struggling with, normally, especially in London apartments, with storage, it needs to be able to function on a day-to-day in a way that isn't laborious for who's going to live there. And so that is, that function part has to come first. So I completely agree. Doing those sort of floor plans and getting that idea of like space planning and what's possible is essential, and that's often what people really struggle with, because they won't see the innovative products that could possibly change how they use their space. They won't have seen some of those things. They won't have seen even some of the things that we sort of look at and just like, well, everyone knows about that. It is that thing of like mirrors built into, you know, where they're built into the wall, and we've actually used all of the storage space behind them because we need that to be able to hide the cistern or whatever it is that that means that somebody looks at it and goes, oh, I didn't realise that did that. Wonderful. But it's it needs to appeal to them to use it. Every system is fantastic until somebody doesn't put that bit of information in. And that's the same thing with every kind of, especially with bathrooms and kitchens when you do them. That function needs to come first, and you need to understand a little bit. So I agree with spending time with them, or sort of seeing the space that they leave behind when they're not there is really useful, because you need to understand, ah, okay, this person on this side of the bed, super, super neat, lovely.
Yeah.
This person on this side of the bed, interesting, challenge. And so you're sort of working, and you want to make sure that both of them still feel comfortable in the space. And, you know, you find out interesting things about people that also affect how you sort of
Some things must be truly horrifying as well.
Mostly it's normally horrifying for the other partner. We had a couple that we were working with, and we, you know, we sort of ask all of the kind of mundane questions, you know, where do you brush your teeth? Do you brush your teeth, you know, by the sink? Do you brush your teeth in the, you know, in the shower first thing in the morning? And we had these guys, and it was like, where do you shave? And one of them was like, obviously by the sink. And the other one was like, I shave in the shower? Horrified. His partner, absolutely horrified. I'm sorry, you do what? We've been together how long? How did I not know this? How did I not know that you're a monster? I think seriously reconsidering. And it was that thing of just
marriage
like,
guidance.
Yeah. But it was that thing of like, okay, well, we'll incorporate that and we'll have a little hidden space for that then, so that you don't see it and you can still do what you need to do. And so it was that kind of thing.
That's not where I thought that story was going.
But it's that kind of thing.
I thought you were going to say, it turns out they don't brush their teeth at all.
Oh, God, that
no,
be
they
so
were both very
sad.
Clean.
Oh, that's
very
okay,
clean
then.
Men. No, that wow. would not have been them at all. But yeah, it's those kind of things that often... We get so used to the things that just don't work. And when somebody else can bring something in and say like, no, that's fine. We can actually change it. We can give you a space that, you know, hides all these things away. Is again, that spa needs that. It needs to be able to not be.
Well, look, let's get into some details here then, because obviously there's fundamental things that you need to have in a bathroom, right? So what's the difference between a spa bathroom and a normal bathroom when it comes to the most fundamental stuff, the toilet, the basin, the taps, the bath, the shower? What's the difference?
I think there's some flexibility from both sides in terms of what the spa bathroom looks like and what the functional standard bathroom looks like. I think sometimes the spa bathrooms, people veer towards the whole technical aspect of spa bathrooms, like the mirrors that Kia referenced as well, the recessed mirrors, where obviously they've got Bluetooth on them now, so you've got the speakers, you can get the musical experience now, so you can get saunas in the bathroom, you can the demisters, and you've got your plug-ins, your shaver sockets, etc. And some of that transports over to a standard bathroom. I think the kind of the two merge. I think in my mind that obviously the Hermann's true to the Scandinavian concept, it depends very much how you react to colour, but typically spa bathrooms serene, quite clean. A lot of people veer towards stone, like calming colours. But then again, that manifests over to, I think the two are like kind of like there are aspects of the two that merge together. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think for me, I think the one thing that is extremely consistent throughout all of the designs is light. That is the only thing I can sort of see that throughout everything is ways to be able to control light so that you're not sitting under, you know, downlights are fantastic for first thing in the morning and, you know, brushing your teeth and all of those things, but they're not relaxing.
Shaving the shower.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They're not relaxing. And so being able to control the light that you have in there, that's the thing that often is, you know, you think of candles, you think of that really beautiful, warm glow of low light that often people associate, whether it's diffused through steam or anything like that. That's what people often are kind of drawn to is, and that does, it massively brings down. So you can go for things that have colours in them in terms of the lighting and colour therapy and things like that. But it's often about bringing that level down, being able to take away a lot of the brightness to a room that really does like transcend all of the different designs. So you can still have something that is very, very clean and classical and low on in terms of colour. Or you can have something that is, you know, the gorgeous, beautiful sort of blues and reds that you see in Hammam type pieces that can still be there. But that light is the only thing that I've ever found sort of like is across the board. You know, there is no blanket list of you must have this for it to be there. Apart from that, for me, that is the one thing where you can build the most beautiful spa-like experience in terms of the actual function of the room. You can have everything in there, a sauna, a steam room, a jacuzzi bath, all of those things. If it's lit by downlights, it's probably not. Yeah, it's going to look great in photos, but it's not going to function very well for actually relaxing the person. So,
but surely there must be an argument. You know, we talk about taking the clutter out of the room or making the room feel different. That's, for example, a freestanding bath rather than a standard bath, where the space is that bit more open. You know, these days, would you ever specify a pedestal toilet? I don't know, but. You know, having the floor open, the floor seat, you can have the lighting underneath it. Checklists or not?
It depends on what necessarily you're going to put in there. Because, like, a built-in bath, we've got a spa-like bathroom that we've just finished for some clients. It's got a 2x1 meter bath in there. It is huge, but it's a built-in piece, and we've built it in order to be.
Yeah.
It's fabulous. It's really great. It was great for our photographer to be able to photograph the other side of the room because she was in the bath. But how we've done that to feel more comfortable is also we've inset it slightly into the floor.
Yeah.
So the clients who are there, they wanted that kind of look and feel to it that it felt really comfortable, but it's still built in. Mm. And it's actually built in, and that's more useful to them because of the kind of style of the room, and also because they're heading towards retirement. And so being able to have a standalone bath that is actually quite, can sometimes be quite a sharp angle to be able to get into, as opposed to on here, they can sit down on the side of the bath and swivel around. Mm-hmm. That will mean that in 15 years time, this bathroom will still be really suitable for them, and actually the bath will still be super usable. And we've also pre-built in where they can put grab hooks, so they're not there at the moment, but as soon as they need them, they know exactly where they can go on the wall to be able to hold and maintain weight. So it's yeah, that functional idea of like, nope, you can still have a built-in bath and have that kind of spa equipment, and also you want a jacuzzi bath, you need it.
Part of the spa-like experience, particularly when it comes to a big bath or a big rain shower or something, which is all part of the experience, uses huge amounts of water.
Mm-hmm.
And people are very, very conscious at the moment, and the bathroom industry is very, very conscious about the amount of water things used. Can you balance the two things out?
Yeah, totally. I think that I've done obviously bathrooms with combination shower and bath. I found recently, working more on apartments within the centre of London, that I'm veering more towards showers than baths per se, where I'm being asked more for heads that do really great things, like you can alter the massage aspect of it, maybe it lights up, maybe it sings some music as well, and it's creating that great experience for them within the shower enclosure. But going back to your question about the water, I think that some of the clients that I've worked with are more about being time poor, so it's quick in and quick out. So although partners, females, maybe want to spend a bit more time in there in the evening, for them it's about, I've got 15 minutes in the morning to get ready, quick in and out of this space, how do I make it functional for them to utilise? And that shower experience, whether it's 2 or 3 minutes, then they're gone. And I don't see that as being so wasteful on water.
Do you find that that's more part of the conversation with the client now than it has been before?
Yeah, especially considering a lot of newer build blocks as well, and this definitely should be also very much part of older refurbishments, there are restrictions on the water output because the plumbing can't cope with it. And I find it fascinating that it's in newer blocks and it's actually really, really essential for older places where, you know, part of, you can redo your property, but if you're, say, in a maisonette, the actual property's main output for water is going to be relatively poor, or at least relatively badly maintained. It's Victorian. And so I find that it definitely is part of the conversation, and being able to have, you know, restrictions on the amount that goes out and also the amount that can be taken away quite quickly is definitely something that people are more aware of. But I would have to say that bathroom companies have done really well in that actually not affecting how it functions. Just because of being able to, even simple things on taps like aerators. So actually a lot of clients wouldn't be able to tell the difference if you had them wash their hands and one that had the aerator and one that didn't. They'd just be like, oh, this feels a little bit lighter, is the only thing that you're sort of going to get. Which when you've got, you know, hard water areas in the whole of London, it's actually quite nice to be able
sort of ties in together, because a lot of these kind of environments, as you say, they're very natural materials, natural stones, it's all very sort of trying to reproduce nature within that space. If you're interested in that, you're probably going to be slightly more conscious of the sustainability of your lifestyle. And if you're trying to improve that and then you're dumping a bucket of water on your head every time you have a shower, it slightly contradicts itself.
I have to say that I've never had a conversation with the client about the, and they should, maybe, obviously there's more of a conversation about it, about the water aspect of it. I think, as Keir said, that some of the bathroom companies become more efficient with the way that pieces function. I mean, for instance, my sister lives in Cape Town, so in South Africa there was obviously a water shortage, so when I went to go and visit her last time, they're like, right, put the bucket in, you have to, you know, and it's like that basic level of it, and that being exposed to that certainly made me a bit more mindful when I came back. But I think that you have to really be sometimes exposed to those aspects of the world and really mindful of it to bring it into your world. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But it's not just the volume of water. That water's got to be heated up.
Yeah.
And so it's the energy that goes into heating, yeah, and heating the water up as well. But people get very conscious of that too. How do we feel about technology within that environment? You touched on it a little bit, but, you know, music, controlling the lights with your voice, some elements of AV that come into that. That sort of seems slightly contradictory a little bit with the idea of having a very natural environment to relax in.
I think in terms of, definitely from a music perspective, anything that in this kind of like hectic, really hectic lifestyle, and where people have become more aware of self-care, and actually that their bathroom's still a part of the house, I think that even if your time poor, you still spend quite a lot of time in there. So anything that creates that feeling of, you know, that you've escaped from the world, be that for 10 or 15 minutes, I think the music's a great one for doing that as well. And as Nikia touched on as well, the lighting, anything that brings that aspect of your mood down, you relax, you kind of like inhale, all of the music, the lighting, they really help with that.
But do you get asked for it?
Yeah, well, yeah, we do. I think definitely people's amount of time that they have to spend and being time poor definitely does come into things. We've used shower controls where you can set it to each person. I love an absolutely scalding shower. My partner absolutely loves getting in the shower after me every single time and screaming. And so it's one of those things that, you know, even those kind of small things of having to spend a bit of extra time in the morning to be able to turn it on at an area where you're not actually having to get into the shower. It can be by the side of the shower. Turn it on. It within seconds is at the temperature that you expect it to be, is one of those things of like, yes, it's very technology based. But that's great. That's a really relaxing thing to not have to be like, you know, everyone's had that hotel experience where you go in and you're just like a little bit more, a little bit less, a little bit more. And it's just like, it's infuriating, especially if this is your day-to-day routine. You don't want to be having that every single morning. So things like that have definitely made their way in of people being aware of the things that are just going to slightly irritate them first thing in the morning. And that's great. So yeah, we have had things like that with technology, really adding to the experience and being able to create a bathroom that is not just relaxing, but super personalized.
Mm. What's the most unusual request you've had for this kind of thing? When we've looked at some of the surveys about how people really use their bathrooms, and of course, what they really do in there is they want to be able to read a book. And so they sort of come up with very convoluted methods of trying to prop a book up, you know, across the bath or whatever. Or, you know, a glass of wine. Where do you put the glass of wine? Where, you know, the specific things that are very particular to them. I will reveal now that I don't drink wine in the bath, but I occasionally have a cup of tea, right?
Yeah.
But I've got nowhere to put the damn thing.
Yeah.
So I end up having to kind of precariously balance it on the basin, which is never going to go well in the end, is it?
How many tea baths have you had?
I've never dropped it in the bath, but I have knocked it into the sink, which is just as bad. So, do you mean, what I mean is people are very particular about their own little sort of peccadilloes, aren't they? You know, that all they really want is somewhere to put the glass of wine down.
Oh, we have a lot of people saying, I'd like to be able to watch Netflix.
Right.
I take my iPad into the bath, and that's what I need to be able to do. And so they're actually not necessarily looking for a screen in the bathroom. They genuinely just want to be able to carry their iPad into the bathroom and have a bath with it without having to bring a chair in from the other room, sit it on the side and have this sort of awkward angle. So yeah, and people are much more aware of that with some of the pieces that come out in that go across a bath that do have place for a cup of tea or a glass of wine, and do have what would be traditionally used as a book stand, but works perfectly well for an iPad. And so, yeah, definitely things like that we're much more aware of that.
Sam, a Netflix shelf. Can you beat a Netflix shelf?
I have never been asked for a Netflix shelf. But I know people obviously do take their phones in. I know that the toilet is the best place for a lot of people to read their phones.
Well, ashamed
to know.
If you listen to a previous episode, you would know that 2% of people check their bank balance while they're sat on the toilet.
Really? Yeah. Wow. No, I mean, I've been asked.
Probably looking at how much that bathroom cost them.
Still sweating. Yeah. I've been asked for the mirror TV. As in, you know, like you're in the bath and you can see the cabinet and then you can watch the TV in there. But I've never been asked for, because most of the bathrooms that I've done have been predominantly showers, it's kind of like it's in and out, it's out. Maybe they've rested their TV via the phone on the side of the sink when they've been washing their face or just prepping in the morning.
Well, there's the Kohler shower head now, isn't it? That's got, is it Google Home built in? It's got Google built into it. But isn't that kind of the point? Aren't you supposed to be leaving all that stuff behind when you go into these kind of environments?
I think a lot of people are looking to cross over a lot of different things, and we're much more used to nowadays doing many things at the same time. So whether it is getting up and, you know, having a shower and being able to check what the weather is so that you can, you know, see if you're going to need a few, you know, if you have those few extra minutes to be able to be in the shower, or you are going to have to go de-ice your car. That is one of those things that, as much as it's just like, oh, look out the window, when you're getting ready in often 15, 20 minutes in the morning, sometimes less if you have children. Yeah. It's one of those things that actually being able to find that out, being able to find out if you do need, you know, that instant notification first thing in the morning that your train is going to be late or has been cancelled, is extremely important to people. And that, as much as sometimes it can feel intrusive, it can also really help how people live their lives and take that stress away. Because if you find out, you know, your children's school, you know, what emails have come in overnight and your children's school is now closed, then that completely changes your morning routine. And you'd rather find that out when you're in the shower than when you've got to the school gates.
Yes,
and
good point.
So it is that kind of thing that, yeah, technology does feed into.
But it's that dual purpose thing again, isn't it? The purpose of the room has to be able to change instantly for what you need it to be, as opposed to just one fixed purpose. Mm. But look, I think we've, between us here, we've come up with the Netflix shelf.
Netflix shelf. Genius.
And I think we should just put on record now that is our idea.
Patent it.
Yeah, and the intellectual property of that is therefore ours.
I agree.
Yeah? I mean, obviously I can't design it, but I'll leave that to you two, but I'll take a third of the money.
Okay.
All right? Okay, perfect. That sounds completely reasonable.
Although, in fairness, I suspect Netflix would want some of that money as well.
Morning's work.
All right, well, look, thank you so much for your time to both of you.
Thank you.
It's been really, really interesting. And hopefully, we're going to make a lot of money.
Yeah,
sounds great.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much to Kia Stanford, who you can find out more about at kiadesigns.co.uk, and that's K-I-A for Kia, and Sam Watkins McRae, who you can see at samwatkinsmcrae.co.uk, and McRae is M-C-R-A-E. That's it for this week. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next time.